So just as the first Sunday of Lent always has the temptation narrative, the second Sunday of Lent always has this so-called transfiguration text. The point being that they want to anticipate the conclusion of the following of Christ, namely this entry into this transfigured life. What historically happened, we have no clue. I think most scholars believe that this is probably a retrojection of some sort of resurrection experience. But that doesn't get us very far, I don't think. So I think it's important to start with the very nature of language, of religious language. One of the few intelligent things my seminary professors told me is that all language begins on the farm. That is, all language is rooted in sense experience. And so if you didn't have sense experience, like poor Helen Keller, you may remember, language is almost inaccessible to her. And that being the case, then what do you do when you come to try to talk about something that is extra sensible? God. What do you do when you have to go to God? Go to love or hope. Try to talk about love or hope. You can't do it. It necessarily becomes metaphorical. How do I love thee? I love thee to the height and depth and breadth, blah, 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 blah. Thank you, Elizabeth Barrett Browning. Okay. So we have to be really careful when we read this transfiguration text. What is going on? What does it mean to be transfigured? To glow, to sparkle, to have these shiny white clothes. No, no, no. Those are all metaphors. For what? What does a transfigured life look like for Jesus or for us? It means that somehow we grow to the point where we don't have to hide anything from each other. We are utterly free with each other. No concealment. A totally fear-free environment. That's what transfiguration means. And you go to much later thought, the Trinitarian thought, which arose several centuries after this stuff was written. I mean, what is the Trinity? That the essence of the Trinity is that these three realities, even to call them persons is metaphorical, are radically open to each other, share everything with each other. And it is that to which we are called. It is that that the transfiguration narrative points to. And this illumines all kinds of other things, I think. I mean, my God in heaven, as I look at my own life and the kind of efforts I make to pretend to be other than I am or to conceal who I am, which is necessary for survival, as we say. It is really important that we look at that seriously to know how remote this possibility is, I think. And we're not just talking about a ménage à deux, you know, a little household where it's a his and hers, or him and him, and her, however you want to arrange that. That's supposed to be the condition of all of us human beings together. All of us strangers. This is a wonderful English word, estrangement. Estrangement. We all, I believe, live in a condition of estrangement. As strangers to each other. For safety's sake, of course. We have to protect ourselves. As a friend of mine said to me years ago, all self-knowledge is bad news. And if that's the case, and the last thing I want to do is to reveal who I am to anybody else. But This is what we're called to. This is what was the genius of Jesus. He did not have to hide anything from anybody. And that, folks, is freedom. That and that alone is freedom. And everything that falls short of that is a kind of bondage. It's a kind of estrangement. Not to use a great Marxist term, a real sense of alienation. That I have to become a stranger to myself, not just to myself, but to other people. And of course, the question arises, how do I get from here to there? And that's where Lent takes on its sharpest focus. It means a death to the self-protecting, self-engrossed self that I really am most of the time. That has to die. See, our problem in the past, at least in my experience of the church, is that, oh, we talk a lot about death, but we don't talk about what's on the other side of it. Well, the other side of that kind of death is not just silence, but this radical openness to each other. And I think there are real intimations of this. In those rare, rare moments in my life, and perhaps they're rare in yours too, I don't know, when you really felt that you could be radically free, even if it was only momentary, with another human being, where you didn't have to conceal, you didn't have to protect, you didn't have to defend against that other. That's the intimation of what the Transfiguration is about and what we are called to. And as I said, the process of getting there from here is going to be very costly.